We're in the middle of mitzvah Ayin Gimel, the 73rd mitzvah, Shelo Lechol Treifa, not to eat an animal that's been torn. And included in this is a certain other prohibitions related to this. Animal that went out of its appropriate place is also considered to be an absolute biblical prohibition, just like an actual treifa, an animal that was torn by another animal and it suffered a physical defect. So you could say that if it suffers a spiritual defect, it also is a problem to be eaten. Mishor she mitzvah zo, the Sefer Chinuch launches into the explanation of the reasoning for the mitzvah, lefi she'aguf kli lanefesh uvo taaseh pe'ulasa, that the body is a vessel for the soul, and it's through the soul that the body does its deeds. V'zulasa lo t'shalei melach tal olam, and v'sai, if it weren't for the soul, so the body will not complete its work ever. V'alkein ba b'tzilo v'lo lira'asa. So the animal, the soul is not supposed to interact in a bad way with the body, rather just to be positive for it. Because God will not cause bad, but rather good for everything. That the body with it between its hands is like a set of tongs in the hand of the ironsmith. Asher imo yotzi klila maaseyo, that through the tongs, the ironsmith makes the vessel. Uvemes kivyos hatzvas chazak umechuvan lechoz bo akelem yasem ulam oman tovim, that when the tongs are good quality, strong tongs, so he can make his metal work better. Vim lo yihi hatzvas tov, lo yavo leolam hakelem mechuvanim v'noyim, and if he doesn't have good tongs, then he's never going to be able to make good vessels. Kimokein bios baguf shum hefsed, meizinyan shiyat hizbatol pulas haseichal kifioso hefsed, that if there's a problem with the functioning of the body, so there's going to be a concurrent lapse in the ability of the soul and the intellect to perform according to their ideal functions. Balkein here chikasnu hatorasenu ashlema mikol davar hagorim bo hefsed. So the Torah wants us to distance ourselves from anything that causes bad things to happen to the body. That it's through this way we can understand all of the Torah's prohibitions against prohibited foods. Even if there's some that we don't know, and we even to the greatest doctors don't know of all of the bad things that could come through the eating of this certain food. If there's something that we don't know, and not even to the greatest doctors know the damage, al tisma alehen. That the great doctor, so to speak, who commanded us not to eat these certain foods is a greater wise person than you or the doctors, as in God. He knows better than you. The chama niskal v'nivhal mishachoshav shein ledvarim nezek o toela selabimasha hisighu. So it's stupid to think that there's no damage that can be caused by things unless it's something that you understand. V'yishlach ladas kilo toaltenu lo nizgala sibason v'nizkan. God didn't reveal exactly why it causes damage to us for a beneficial reason for us. So people will say, I am very wise. That a certain thing that the Torah commands us not to do, that we know the reason why we're not supposed to do this. So it only applies in this place. A certain type of people who will be adversely affected by it. But I'm not adversely affected by it. It's like the Reform movement, if they say that the only reason that the Torah forbids us from eating pork is because of whatever disease that's found, trichinosis that's found in pork. We now that we have treatment for this, and we have better hygiene for meat processing, so it's not necessary. So the Torah explicitly didn't say the reason. You shouldn't try to guess the reason, so you shouldn't say it doesn't apply. Even in rabbinical commandments, we find this. When I was talking a little bit on Shavuos about dairy products, I skipped this whole section of the Mishnah, but the Mishnah talks about how when they first promulgated the decree against Goyisha cheeses, then the Tanoim explicitly did not tell people the reason until the prohibition had caught on and the people already got used to not eating Goyisha cheeses. because they didn't want people to say, oh, it doesn't apply to us, we know better. So they wanted the prohibition to apply without any reason before they started revealing the reasons. Here, we don't know the reason. We don't know the reason for the Torah's decrees, and we have to realize that. Upen yispata l'divrehem echad min hapsoim. So stupid people sometimes are very easily swayed by the words of very smart people or people who claim to be very smart. You write an article with a lot of fancy language, and the stupid person is going to say, oh, that's very convincing. This person speaks so authoritatively. It's a major problem in society nowadays, and certainly in Torah society. There are a lot of people who don't know that much Torah and have a very superficial knowledge of Torah, certain aspects of Torah, and they speak very authoritatively about the topic, and people tend to be swayed by them, and they say, oh, the great rabbis obviously don't know this, but it's not so simple in many cases. I mean, sometimes it could be that somebody made a mistake along the line, even somebody who's otherwise very great. I'm not saying they're infallible. I'm just saying you have to be very, very careful before making judgments about the issues until you are really immersed yourself in the topic and know it on a very deep level. Al kein lo nisgala taiman lahoyalanu min hamichshol hazeh. So the reason was not revealed so that God doesn't want us to fall into this trap of trying to determine the reasoning for the mitzvos in a very concrete way as opposed to the more speculative way that the Sefer HaChinuch does, or the more rationalistic way. That the in medical science, I guess of his day, whatever, it says that the meat of the animal suffering these physical blemishes, asuras lanu molit hefsed el guf ochlo, that it causes damage to the body of the person who eats it. Machmasha trefos mora choli babahema, because these trefos, these defects, indicate that the animal is suffering an illness, and therefore its meat is not as helpful. So say, well, I'm going to try to, based on this reasoning, so let's say the animal just got this defect an hour ago, so what's the problem if v'nishchata, and it got slaughtered immediately after receiving this damage, so it couldn't have been that sick. Now what's the big deal? Kilo mechochma tikshel tisel. It's not from wisdom that you ask this question, it's rather from the opposite, from stupidity. Everything has a beginning. There's no difference between the beginning and the middle and the end. If it's all, it's everything is sort of generalized. It's a general prohibition. That if in the passing length of time there will be clear damage to this animal, as time goes on, so it'll clearly be damage caused by this defect. So once the thing starts, it might be a little at the beginning, but there's still a problem with it. That damage, even a little bit of damage, is bad for the animal. All the laws of the Torah and anything of significance or of lasting value, this is the type of reasoning and thinking we have to have about it. That if you say, well, sometimes this applies, sometimes it doesn't, if it's only at the beginning, then it's okay, if it's a little later on, it's not okay, then we have a problem, it's too dachistic, as we say in Yeshivish. That there's too much splitting hairs between different things. You need to give, in order for people to function properly with the laws of the Torah, you need to give them general rules. Of course, many times there are specific rules, but this is too dachistic. So where did we have this before? Chinuch mentioned such a concept before also in the laws of Shomrim, where it says if you borrow an object and you borrow its owner at the same time, then you are exempt from payment if anything happens to the animals or the object. So the Chinuch asks the question, so why should it be if you borrow the animal with the owner at the time that you originally borrowed the object that you're borrowing, it should be that if the owner was with the object at the time that the damage happens. I said, no, it wants to give a general rule. That's what we call Nasata Dvarecha L'Shiurim. We find many times the rabbinic laws that it's too much, too many differences within the law. They have to give one general principle governing. Dinei ha-mitzvah, the halachos of the mitzvah, kigon ha-treifo shenimsur lo le-Moshe b'Sinai. So it says simply in the pasuk, basar basada treifa lo sochelu, you shall not eat meat torn in the field. But we assume it's halacha le-Moshe b'Sinai, one of the categories of things that the specific laws were given to Moshe at Sinai and transmitted orally, are evehin shmona avos. There are eight types of general categories of defects that cause an animal to become a treifa. Drusa, trod upon, nekuva, punctured, chasera, missing, a body part that is, netula, if it was taken, a body part, taken out afterwards, psuka, split, krua, torn, nefula, the animal fell down, shivura, or if some body part was broken, and the different body parts have different laws governing them, which is a problem. The hadrusa, an animal that was trodden upon, he hatrefos hachomer bechulan. That's the most stringent laws governing it. Why? Lefi shehu mefurish b'Torah, because it's explicit in the Torah that a drusa is a problem. That's the simple meaning of basar basada trefa, that an animal that was torn apart in the field is when a larger animal comes and attacks it with the claws, not with the teeth necessarily, is in the category of drusa. But drusa is when a larger animal claws a smaller animal to the... Again, it depends how big the animal being attacked and how big the attacker is. So, for example, a huge cow, only a lion attacking it causes it to become a drusa. But if you have a smaller animal, then even a wolf could cause it to become a drusa. And if you have a tiny bird, for example, even a cat, a regular cat, could cause it to become a drusa. Lefikach amru zichronim levracha, Chazal tell us, shekol safik habalanu alav asur, that any type of doubt, whether this animal is a drusa or not, is asur. So if you, even if you don't see it happen, you just see an animal walk into the chicken coop, and then the chicken has some nail that looks like it's a nail from the larger animal sticking in it, and you're not sure, even so, it's still forbidden. Ushar trefos is prohen sveikin mutar. And the other types of trefos, sometimes when there's a doubt whether the trefa applies in this case, then it will issue a lenient ruling. Each of these eight general categories has many specific types of trefos arising from them. The cheshbon klal ha-trefios she'efshar she'imotu ba-behima v'chaya v'of ha'ola b'yadeinu v'pratam l'fi adoma midivra ha-gemara hem ayin beiz. That the total number of possible types of trefos, specific types of trefos, that are 72. Im tarfos echad she'esh ba-of yosar al ha-behima. There's one type, included in the 72, is one type of trefa that's only possible in fowl and not in animals, and that's if the head bone of a waterfowl is punctured, then that is a specific trefa that has to do with fowl and not with larger animals. The other ones are the same in both in fowl and in larger animals. Also, there's one that's subject to a machlokas, which is if the intestines were heated to the degree that they started to change color, according to Rambam, that only applies to birds, according to the others. No, it's just not really, it's basically impossible to apply to larger animals, but it doesn't, strictly speaking, only apply to birds. Yeah. You should not add on to these, and you should not subtract. That any type of defect that could happen to an animal besides the ones that were specifically enumerated by the early sages, and these are the ones that all the Jewish courts decided upon, efshar shetichya, it could live, where these are the ones that the Jewish courts decided that it's not possible for the animal to live, and therefore it should be considered a treifa. Even if scientific evidence states otherwise, she'ein sof halichyos, that really this animal is not going to live, and all the ones that are considered to be treifas in the received tradition, even if scientific medical evidence tells us otherwise, maybe some of them really don't cause death so fast. Maybe the animal will survive for a couple of years with having this defect. You make yourself crazy if you try to second guess all these things. We just have our list of 72 treifas, and that's it. If it's not included in the list of 72 treifas, we do not consider it. Shenemar, in many cases in halacha, scientific evidence is admissible, but in this case, not. It's specifically singled out as saying scientific evidence is not admissible. Shenemar, al pi ha-Torah. So the Torah tells us that we decide halachos based on what the sages tell us, and not necessarily based on what each individual person seems to think that the medical evidence leans toward. In the third chapter of Maseches Chulin, called Elu Treifos, it lists in great detail all the possible defects that could happen to an animal and how that would render the animal a treifa. All these types of defects that the sages enumerated. There's a great rule that you don't have to check the animal for the presence of these defects. I say if you were cutting apart the animal and you happen to notice it, then obviously that's a problem. But you don't have to go through each body part of the animal and look for all 72 of the possible defects. Why? That we have a rule that the chazoka, the assumed status of an animal, is considered to be kosher unless you know for a fact to be otherwise. Also called rov behemos ksheros, that most animals are not defected to the extent that they would render them a treifa. Ki rov balichayim bechezkas briyim anu machzikim osam, yeah, most animals are healthy. Zulasi beachas mehen. Oh, there's one big exception to this rule. There's one thing that we have to check for before we eat the meat of the animal, and that's what? Which is that treifos matzli harbe, that this is a very commonplace example of treifos, and we know that we have a rule derived from this, really. This is the major source for it. The Gemara doesn't say explicitly that you have to check for this. It's actually found in the early commentaries of the Rishonim to the Gemara, that from this case, since this was the custom at all times to do this, which I haven't even mentioned what it is yet, but since the custom was to check the lungs, as we're going to see, before eating the animal, so that's where the principle is developed from, where of what's called miut hamotsui. So normally we know that according to the Torah, we have a right to rely on majority. For the vast majority of cases, we can rely on the majority. So for a case where you have to check, according to Midar Abanan, Midar Aisa, you always go according to the majority, but Midar Abanan on a rabbinic level, you have to check for the presence of any problem, and that's when the thing is called a miut hamotzoi, when it's a minority that is commonly found. So, for example, we have another common application of this nowadays is when you're checking vegetables for the presence of insects. That on a Torah level, as long as the particular vegetable or fruit most of the time is free of insects, so you don't have to check at all. And if it's what's called a miut hamatsui, then we assume that, at least on a rabbinic level, if it's a commonplace minority that happens, then it's called a miut hamatsui, and you're not allowed to eat it unless you check it. But if, let's say, it became impossible to check, or there's some reason why you couldn't check it, then you go according to the Chazal didn't tell us that we're not allowed to eat it b'dieved. That, let's say, you cooked a certain vegetable that has a miut hamatsui of insects in it, of insects being found in this vegetable, and you can no longer check it for the presence of insects, so then you are still allowed to eat it b'dieved. But if it's most of the time this vegetable is infested with insects and you didn't check it, then you would not be allowed to eat it even b'dieved. So the poskim give a different measurements for what's considered a miut hamotzoi. Some say that it's if it's 10% of the time. Some say if it's 7.5% of the time. Some say there is no actual number. It's just if it's a commonplace thing, you have to use what's considered to be generally understood to be a common minority of occurrences. It's very hard. People like specific figures nowadays, so that opinion isn't so popular. It's also a question how you measure it in terms of, for again, the vegetables and the insects issue. Is it per bite? Or per serving, per storage container of this vegetable. A lot of that's why sometimes it gets you off the hook a little bit if you assume that there's no specific measurement. It's just like if you would ask someone, oh, is this vegetable sometimes infested? They would say, no, rarely, nah. Or they'd say, then you wouldn't have to check at all. They'd say, it's sometimes infested, then you would have to check it. And they say, oh yeah, that's really infested most of the time. Then you wouldn't even allow it to be eat it b'dieved without having checked it. So if you know me, I kind of like the less exacting definitions of things sometimes, like my shear on the kezias, like how big a kezias is. That's about the size of an olive. No, so I kind of like the definition that there's no exact number associated with it, but that's not the commonly accepted approach nowadays. Anyway, so back to the chinuch. So terem nochal basar habasar minisha zeh treifus matzui harbe. This type of defect in the animal is very found. It's called a miut hamatzui. The hu treifus harea. That is the defects having to do with the lungs. Shemitzuyin ba ririn hanikrain sirchos. That there are strands of mucus or some sort of hardened scab that are called sirchos. One of the treifos, one of the 72 treifos is called nikva hareya, if the lung had a puncture. So if it has these strands connecting the lung to a surrounding tissue, then we're afraid that it's almost an inevitable thing that that these things are going to rip off, and the lung is going to get punctured. So since it's really on the verge of being punctured, that's already considered as if it's punctured already. However, this is one opinion in the Rishonim, as the Sefer HaChinuch quotes it. Another opinion in the Rishonim, it's a huge machlokas Rishonim, there are many Rishonim on either side, that what another opinion is that it is evidence that there is a hole actually existing there already. Not that it's about to become pulled off and create a hole, but rather this shows that there's a healing process going on from a hole, so the lung really already did have a hole in it. So, l'fikach tzarech adam liros la'olam be'ezet sad yu osan ririn b'reya terem shiochal min ha'behema. You have to look exactly how these scabs, strands, are ordered in the lungs before you eat from the animal. Osan be'inyan she'efshar ki b'tenuasa minak v'ha'reya treifa. If they're found in a manner that if in normal walking of the animal that these things would rip apart and create a hole in the lung, then it's treif. Shanu omrim kol omed linokiv al kol panim kenokuv chashvin and leichilu mesahi. That we consider it as if it's about to be punctured, then it's punctured already. Achar she'ev sharla lihinatzel min hamavis. That since it's impossible for the animal to save itself from death, so then it's considered to be already dead. The adua ki oso hacholi hagomel osan rearin b'makomos hasidin linakev haschalas choli hamevi l'demavesu. That the sickness that causes these rearin to form is the beginning of a sickness that leads to death. Achar shebeosan makomos nasu rearin, because it's in these places that the rear developed, and it's only certain places that we assume it's a problem. These are the places where beautiful picture.
Uh-huh. Colored, yeah.
Yeah, that the rearin are considered to be a problem, but that seems from the Gemara and the best perushim, the best explanations on the Gemara. Kol makom ba'olam sheha'uma srucha treifa ve'ena teres bebedika. That if the sircha is connecting part of the large lobes of the lung, the ones on the bottom, over here, as you can see in this picture. See, the lung has two large lobes and a few smaller lobes on top. So then that is considered to be treif, and it would not be permissible even if you would perform some examination on the sircha, or you would blow up the lung or something and see if it was punctured, because if you blow it and nothing happens. I've seen people, it's very interesting. You extract the lungs with the windpipe from the animal, you put your mouth on the top part of the windpipe, you blow, and the lungs blow up. It's very fascinating to watch. But you'll see if there's a puncture in the lung, there'll be air coming out. And if not, the lungs will just fill up, and then when you take your mouth off, they'll contract again. So losi b'inyan echad im srucha ledofen v'yesh maka b'dofen, except in one case where it's connected to the wall of the cavity of the body, and there is some sort of wound on the cavity, the wall of the cavity. The sircha kula yotzis mokom hamaka. It's completely on the other side, not on the lung, but on the side of the body. The scab is completely coming out of the place where the wound is. Shebo ne'mar tibadik. In this case, you could check the lung for the presence of a hole. Beis matirim below b'dika. Some say it's even okay, even without checking. Beis motzir miklal zeim sircha luna shebetzida mechitoch lechitoch. Some say also if it's connected to the smaller lobe that's immediately adjacent to it. Kein minhagenu hayom leheter, our minhag in Spain is to permit these types of sirchos that are from the big one to the little one, if it's immediately adjacent to it. Okay, so let's stop here and we can discuss the issue. I mean, not stop. We still have some time. I meant stop for temporarily and discuss the issue that was raised before about glatt kosher meat. So the issue really is that there was a practice that we see many times that there are many of the cases of these sirchos are very problematic and they actually cause the animal to become treif. So there was a minhag in certain places that developed that it was felt that if you handled the sircha and you rubbed it a little bit and the sircha just fell apart, then that was not really a sircha. That was just, they called it a rear, although here they use the terms interchangeably, but that was not considered to be a real sircha, and therefore the animal was not necessarily to be considered absolutely treif.
It's a benign growth.
Something like that. So the Rashba said that that's completely incorrect, and anybody who does that is kemachil treifos liyisrael, that if anybody who rubs the sirchos and tries to take them off is as if he's feeding treif animals to the Jewish people, and that was the custom in Spain. Rashba was in Spain, and the Shulchan Aruch quotes this. The Mechaber says that you absolutely cannot do anything to the sirchos. If you see any connection in a place where it's problematic, then the animal is treif. However, in Ashkenazi countries, it was generally accepted to perform this examination on the sircha and rub it, and if it came out, then they would not consider it to be a problem. So that's where we have a difference between glatt kosher and non-glatt kosher. Glatt kosher means that the glatt means smooth, so if the lung is completely smooth, there are no sirchos in it. If the lung is completely smooth, there are no sirchos in problematic places at all, that's called glatt kosher. And that's, Sfardim really should insist on that standard. Because Sfardim, Paskin like the Rashba, whereas the Ashkenazi tradition is to be makel on this. So nowadays we have a new category invented called regular glatt as opposed to glatt base Yosef. Which basically comes from the fact that when the Hungarians started coming to America en masse and after World War II, so they insisted on glatt kosher, even though they were Ashkenazi, they were stringent in many areas of halacha, so they insisted on only having glatt kosher meat as opposed to the people already in America, Lithuanians, Germans, all these people, Ashkenazim, did not insist on glatt kosher. Maybe there were some very pious people who did. You went to the slaughterhouse and selected the animals that were glad for themselves, but it wasn't a communal hakpada custom at all. That's a different issue. That's in the issue, the mentality in America.
So all of a sudden it came up, and now everything has to be glad.
Well, that's also a different issue in terms of that nowadays people are much less expert in the laws of treifos at all, because nowadays we have this mentality, oh, it's a shayla, just sell it to the goyim, we don't need to get involved in the shayla, so people are much less expert, so that's
okay. However, in Europe,
there were always some punctilious people who did insist on it, even Ashkenazim, Levil Nagon and Reb Chaim Volozhiner also insisted on glatt, but it wasn't a communal preference until Hungarians came to America. So then there was a much higher demand for glatt kosher meat. So basically what happened is that they started labeling animals as glatt if the sircha came off very easily. It didn't mean that there were no sirchos. If the sircha came off very easily, then they would still call it glatt. Non-glatt would be when there were sirchos that you needed to rub a little bit more strongly. And then we have a category called glatt beis Yosef, which is the real glatt, which is the way the Rashba and the Shulchan Aruch Paskin, which is that there cannot be any sirchos at all. So if you really, really want to keep glatt kosher, then you have to buy from a Sardi Shechita, where they are makbid on this, or, I mean, not only Sardi Shechita, there's some other places that have it, but then you have to buy specifically beis Yosef meat, and not even just glatt kosher meat does not suffice. Glatt kosher meat only suffices for the Hungarian custom, or the higher standard. Nowadays, glatt kosher has become synonymous with just the higher standard. You see, Empire chickens are labeled as glatt kosher, which doesn't make sense, because you don't have to check the lungs of the chicken, only of red meat. Really, it creates a problem. The fact that really, when you're buying glatt kosher, it's not really, really glatt. Maybe it's to a little bit of a higher standard, perhaps, but it's not really glatt. Also, we have another issue that it creates is the fact that even people who were makbid on glatt kosher, really glatt kosher, like the Vilna Gaon and Ruchaim Volozhiner, and Sephardi Poskim write this way also, that they say, well, if you don't know if meat is glatt or not, so then you're still allowed to eat it because it's as if the animal, ideally, we'll see in a second in Sefer Chinuch, he's going to say this as well, that ideally you're supposed to check the lungs of the animal, but if you fail to check the lungs of the animal, then b'di'evet, you're still allowed to eat the animal because of the rov. Like I said, similar to the case of checking vegetables for insects, even if you're supposed to check the vegetable for insects, if most of the time the vegetables are insect-free, then you're allowed to eat the vegetables b'di'evet if you didn't check them. So here too, since you don't know if the lungs had any problems or not, so you're allowed to rely on the rov, that the animal was fine and did not have any issue on its lungs. It's only the chatchila. They insisted that to check the lungs and had for any adhesions at all. So the problem nowadays that we have the glatt being on a separate line. We have the glatt beis Yosef marketed to Sfardim, and we have the glatt kosher versus not glatt kosher, which non glatt kosher barely exists anymore. But since the really glatt animals are separated out and labeled as such, so you really don't have this anymore with even the glatt kosher, because you know almost for a fact, unless there are, I have to check the metzias, but it could be that some of the really glatt animals do stay in the regular production line, but you know basically for sure that this animal is not glatt unless you actually buy the glatt Beit Yosef meat. And that creates a problem. Another kasha on the whole institution of glatt at all. The insistence that it has to be completely free of any adhesions is the fact that we know that rov behemos ksheros, that most animals are kosher, and the percentage of animals in the United States of America that's actually glatt beis Yosef, that has no adhesions whatsoever, is well under 10%, as far as I'm aware. So how could it be if the vast majority, if really glatt beis Yosef is the correct standard? It's very difficult, because how could it be that the vast majority of animals in America are not actually kosher? So that's a major problem as well. So it could be, though, that there's a difference in metzias, because nowadays animals have a different diet, and maybe they're treated with certain drugs, which are a different climate. So it could be they're more likely to develop adhesions, and maybe you could say in Hachinami. Maybe it's true that they're nowadays the rule that most animals are kosher maybe doesn't apply anymore, but that's a little bit difficult to say, and you have to do a lot more investigation as to the metzias to determine that accurately. But even the Rambam writes that technically the halacha should be that as long as you can determine that there's no hole that's going to come out of this sircha, then it should be kosher. These are all minhagim that developed later. So you can say everything is chumras on top of chumras, and this way Rabbi Ganach put it to me once. You see that maybe this is not the standard maker din, but if you can, so it would be better to be mahadir, the more glad as possible. And these are all very unclear issues in terms of the halacha. Yeah.
If one goes to a safari,
wait a minute, it's more kosher.
The other way around.
Yeah.
Oh, you said it's
the Sephardic meat is more kosher. It could. I mean, technically, they could be. Sephardim in certain areas have different traditions in other trefos that are more lenient than the Ashkenazim, or other in terms of taking out the forbidden fats and the forbidden nerves and things like that. Could be that they have more lenient traditions, but I don't know if you have to be concerned about that if you don't know, again, like I said, because Ro Behemos are kosher, and B, I'm not aware of nowadays if there's any Hechsher that will give a Hechsher to meat that's not, besides the Galat issue, that's not kosher, both according to Sephardic and Ashkenazic standards. So I certainly, everybody, why not? If you could buy your meat at a Sephardi butcher, that's better. Why not? If you could, if Galat Beis Yosef is available, you know. Like I said, in America, we have we can consume as much as we want, so if you could take only the 5% of animals, or whatever, the Galat Beis Yosef, whatever. Again, very, very unclear.